Morning Focus, in association with Shannon Airport. Fly Shannon and pack more into your city break. Depart hassle-free to Manchester, Edinburgh, London and more. Connecting you to the world. Explore more today on shannonairport.ie.
And a very good morning to you all. It's Morning Focus. Here with you until 12 noon. As you know, we've got plenty more to come, including our Friday panel who join me now in studio. We will meet them very shortly, but before all of that, as I go looking for my audio that I prepared a little bit earlier on, let's go and remind ourselves of some of the main news stories of the past 7 days.
I want to see them off the street. I want the Gardaí to use every resource they have to bring successful prosecutions. And most of all, I want the judiciary to have the guts for once and not come out with the same old rhetoric about them being so young and not deserving of harsh punishments. These thugs don't think of that when they have someone on the ground and they continue to kick and beat them.
We have taken a number of measures. Those measures did see fewer patients on trolleys in November and December when the winter started, but it did show again the constraints of the system when you get to January. And each January, regardless of the name of the Minister for Health, we come back to this challenge, and the only way we're going to fix it is more capacity and proper health reform, and they are the priorities for 2018.
The only difficulty is cost. No matter what you suggest, if there's a cost to it, procrastination sets in and putting things on the long finger sets in. It's extremely frustrating to keep repeating and repeating and repeating. These are the solutions, yet the powers that be fail to initiate any reform.
It's disgraceful and laughable. If he was unfit, he probably wouldn't be sitting there and wouldn't have defeated the most qualified group of candidates the Republican Party has ever seen.
It would be amazing if people out there thought, new year, new start, I'm going to give a small amount or whatever they can afford.
You're welcome back. That is some of the sounds of the past 7 days. You heard from Mike McKee, Shannon Sinn Féin councillor, expressing concerns about antisocial behaviour in the town. From White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders on the allegations made against Donald Trump in the Book of the Year, Fire and Fury, by Michael Wolff, CEO of the ISPCC, who operate Childline, Grainne Long and New Year's Resolutions, in her hope that some people will use it to give more to charity. And in the middle there, Health Minister Simon Harris on overcrowding in our hospitals, and Clare TD Michael Harty expressing doubt on whether the government truly has the will to tackle the matter. I'm joined in studio to discuss these stories and more by Gabriella Hanrahan, Community Liaison Officer with University of Limerick. She's from Ennis. Gareth Howard of Crimmins Howard Solicitors, based in Shannon, and Patrick O'Neill, a filmmaker based in Partine. Just lots of other stuff as well. Good morning to you all.
Good morning.
Thanks very much for joining us. Patrick, I noticed your little bit of a smirk when I mentioned Fire and Fury by Michael Wolff, the new Donald Trump book. You're looking forward to it?
Yeah, we're getting to a pre-release. I think he must have been setting himself up that he could pull it forward. That's not an accident.
What a wonderful marketing strategy, but the publishers are ready to go. The thing's printed. It's sitting in a warehouse. We might as well get it over the counter and paid for it
quickly before the legal threats.
And the more they go after him, the more the sales will go up.
Legal threats.
we got an advisory. But the more the thing about he's trying to block it or use legal advice to try and block it, the more the demand for that thing is going to go way up.
It's gone to welfare. Yeah. Absolutely. I think it's 2 o'clock today that it's available for download.
Yeah. The thing that's coming out is that he never wanted to be president. He never thought he would be elected.
Yeah. I think what's really interesting about it is that we're told it's fake news and it's made up, and if Donald Trump says it, well, it must be true. But you know, in one way, you would have to feel a certain amount of sympathy for a man, because he's the poor little rich kid. I think as Bill Clinton, maybe it wasn't Bill Clinton, I thought it was Bill Clinton, said once upon a time that the White House was the pinnacle of the state, of the US penitentiary system, because, you know, you were utterly caged when you were there. And, you know, one excerpt from the book that's well publicised this stage is that he wanted to put a lock in his bedroom door, and this was unacceptable to the security services.
Yeah, yeah.
Why would you want a lock in a door in the house completely secure? Privacy, I guess, but... You know, so this really is somebody, you know, in their ivory tower, and that's it. It paints a picture of a very unhappy man, you know, who eats McDonald's, I presume because he likes it, but he says because he's paranoid about being poisoned.
Yeah.
And this is one way, you know, that they...
It's pre-cooked. Whew. It's pre-cooked. There's so much in it. I don't know. Do you care?
Well, I care because he's the president of the United States of America, but... In all fairness, I think we've gone to the unbalanced insight on Donald Trump, because it's just amazing the media focus that's on him. And we know every single detail about him that we didn't know about, the very quirky things. Mm. And I'm sure every single president had quirky things about them. He's an enigma, really, isn't he? You know,
I suppose the only thing is that we know so much, probably because... of some of the dysfunction that appears to be within his White House, and that's also been reported on this week amongst several other things
as
well.
Like, really, is there? Did we expect anything else? He was never in politics before. He walks into a very structured, organised system, and he comes from a system where he was solely boss. He could demand what he needed to demand and get the response. He walks in, we know the political system is nauseatingly slow to make decisions on anything, and that it's all about compromise, and we know anything to do with that side of life, it is about compromise, and he doesn't do compromise. Yeah. So, like, to me, it's not going to tell us anything that we don't know about what's going on there at the moment. Is it going to enlighten us? Is it going to empower us anymore? Is there going to be a change out of it? No. The change is going to be when the next election happens.
I published some things recently, but I suppose if someone's going to put 10 euros across the counter, I'll never know if they're read it or not. If the person's written it for commercial purposes, he's doing the right things right now.
Exactly.
He provides the best sound bites himself, what he comes out with. And the rubbish this week about my button is bigger and more powerful than his.
Yeah.
If this man was the chairman of the local club or association, he'd be chucked out for it. Mm. Are you joking me? Such childish behaviour. Mm. And yet it shows the system is broken. He gets away with this.
His fake news media awards are Monday night. My fingers are crossed.
Oh.
We'll move on. We didn't intend to talk about that this morning.
Thanks for throwing that one in there, Gavin.
We'll have our fingers crossed for you.
It's uphill the whole way here now, anyway.
The last few minutes might have helped.
Like any good Fianna Fáil, I'll vote twice.
Gareth and I were just talking about cycling up hills. I mean, I think that's what you're doing to us.
We'll move on. And we'll come back to from matters international to matters local. And Gabriella, I'll start with yourself. It is so inevitable and so depressing to do, as we've been doing this week, to talk about overcrowding and trolley numbers in our hospitals. Yeah. And
honestly, we talk about New Year. Sure, there's nothing new so far. It's the same old. Every January, we have to deal with this issue. And I would just love if we could measure the stress levels in the country because of our health service. Not because of people that are sick, but because of people that are afraid to get sick because our system is so dysfunctional. I mean, that is the one cry you hear from so many people is, I hope I don't get sick. I really don't want to get sick. Because there's, you know, we know that it's dysfunctional and we know that it's functional. What I can't understand about it is that we know every year we have statistics on who gets sick, why they get sick, where they get sick, and we have expertise to make people better or to give them long-term care or to whatever we need in that respect. That information is all there. So to me, it's an administrative issue. Somebody is not tackling the administration of what needs to be done. I mean, I know I hear all the time that more resources need to go in, but why do we have to put more resources into a dysfunctional system? We need actually to look at the system and see how it works. Now, the one thing I would say is that really every minister for health since the late 90s, how many of them have there been? How many of them have been paid to actually manage the health service, and it's got worse. So there's an issue around how politically we approach it and how we manage it politically.
I wonder at the same time, though, I mean, look, there are obviously massive issues in parts of the health service. Yep. But if you even just take a look at Dúr Dóil and something and the main hospital for all of us here, something you often hear is that, you know, there are issues in the ED, but when you get upstairs, when you get admitted, things are much better. I mean, something that you're right in that the stress and the anxiety is there, and it's tantamount and it's real, and it's legitimate and it should be there. But you know, how much of it is there because the likes of me are talking about it in the mornings, and the likes of the papers are putting it on the front page? I mean, we're talking like keep your fluey kids home from school is the headline. I mean, this morning. Yeah. That's the biggest news story in the country.
That's the biggest, absolutely.
The same strains of flu that are there this year were there last year.
Absolutely. But that's what I mean about it, that there's nothing new about this story. So if there's nothing new, why are we not solving it? Like, I actually think, if you look at when we campaigned in Clare to maintain our hospital, and we were told that no, that regional, those local hospitals don't work because we need centres of excellence. Now, I had reason to be in the emergency department earlier on this year in the University Hospital in Limerick.
This week or
no, no, in the last number of months, okay. Right? In this past year, I had reason to be there for an emergency. Now, there was nothing excellent about the A&E war there. Mm. It was catastrophic,
and was
is
that,
all I could
just
say.
Just to be clear, was that the new ED?
No, they were opening the new ED in a few weeks' time.
Okay, so you're going back to last spring.
I'm going back to May, actually, last year.
Yeah, because it was the end of May when it opened. That's the only, just for clarity's sake.
Yeah, absolutely. And it hasn't improved since, because you still have people for hours and hours. Now, what that means to each individual, the lack of dignity for people that are lying under, it is extraordinarily awful to be there with a family member and watch that. And also, I think, the lack of dignity for the staff. Like, they have to push against trolleys, they have to move trolleys all the time. How they remember who they're administering what to, you have to keep, and they say when you get into the system, no, because you have to keep, because the system is so dysfunctional, you have to be there and you have to be cognizant of what the patient that you're with needs. So I don't believe, I think that's rather a myth around when you get into it, everything is fine. I don't believe that.
I have to, in the interest of fairness, have to point out that the new one is bigger and the hospital management say it's better and all of that as well.
We still have the, still as have report this
There's
week.
No doubt about it. Yeah, I think we've all had personal and experiences about that. I mean, I do have connections to the nursing side of it, but you know, the people who work in A&E, probably of all the care, have probably got the most difficult of challenges. Mm. Look, if we bring it back to a business, maybe that's where my earlier background is, but I can't build, let's say I have a hotel that has a capacity of 60 people, and I get demands through the tourism budget now that it looks like, you know, I might occasionally have 80 or 100 guests. I'm not going to build a hotel to the peak. So you're in that same logistical operational problem all the time, that the wave of people coming through A&E has high variability.
Yeah.
That's just the nature of health. Imagine a world, I just throw this out, take out the waiting rooms completely. What would the world of healthcare look like? What it would do is move the point of decision-making away from the chaos of a waiting room, and just throwing that up, because now you're looking at primary care. Everything's gone to centralization. You're looking at saying we get bigger economies of scale out of big systems. We get the problems that Gabriella just mentioned out of big systems. Big systems are fine, but if you're living in West Clare, the distance might kill you. Long before you get to A&E, depending how serious the medical condition is at that time. So the decision to pull everything to the centre, really at that point of care, is primary care. It's my GP. Mm-hmm. And some sort of assessment system that streams people into beds is what's needed. Because what you have is a clearinghouse, if you like.
But what I will say on that is that, I mean, if you look at the system as it is here, you have a medical assessment unit in Ennis, and also in St. John's, and also in Nina, where you have these outer things. And, okay, I know there's a lot more that's available in Limerick. To an extent, and you can critique parts of it, there have been efforts made to put in that system that you're talking about, and the public in many instances go, well, I'm going to end up in Limerick anyway, I'm just going to go straight there, so I'm not there for as long.
But see, not everybody in the waiting room has the same level of priority, right? We say it comes in at waves, and this bulk of people arrive, the assessment process is so critical to begin streaming them, because if you had a car accident out near Dura Doyle and there's serious injuries, that's a priority.
Of course.
So the system that kind of streams people, and if you're low on priority, you're going to wait. That if the system is full and the beds are full, there is no other place to go. So I imagine a world that there wouldn't be a waiting room at all. So because the waiting room is a holding position for people that you can't deal with. And you can build the A&E 10 times the size. And all you're doing is actually containing the problem. You're not solving it.
Okay.
So I think there's new thinking. Let's use a medical term there, Gavin. Surgery is required on the system, not on the patient. We need to radically change the system, in my view. Trimming in the edges is not going to do it. Throw another 600 million into it next year, I think, what we're doing, ain't going to fix the problem. The system's the problem.
Gerald?
You know, you say there, is this a real issue or is it simply perceived? We're reading about it in the papers.
It is a real issue, but I think that the fears are heightened. That's
Well, I suppose you might say there's a certain level of scaremongering, and it really depends on your position on the topic. you know, we're operating here in Ireland a healthcare system where private enterprise can come in and compete against it very well. And that must indicate that for the costs of the setup of these hospitals, that we're doing something very badly wrong.
But aren't they cherry picking the easier cases, the more straightforward ones?
You must remember that the Galway Clinic has got an A&E department. They're not cherry picking. You walk into the, but if you're lucky enough, and you have the income, and you have your private health insurance, your choice is: do I go local or will I go to the Galway Clinic? But just if we. I just want to look at one thing.
I will let you finish. But isn't it the case of the Galway Clinic that, like, it's an A&E department to a certain level? If you are in a very serious incident, if you are in an accident, you're not going to the Galway Clinic, you're going to the public hospital, where it is, and I don't like talking about people in this way, but it is more expensive to treat somebody in that care, in that situation.
You're talking about more expensive in the clinic or more expensive in the public hospital?
No, more expensive in the public hospital. It's more expensive to treat somebody who's just been in a very, very bad car accident, for example.
Well, you're going to be connected by an ambulance and brought to the public hospital.
But what I mean is, it's to a point. The likes of the Galway Clinic are doing a job, but the public service is always going to look after you in certain instances.
Well, if we didn't have the Galway Clinic, there'd be bigger problems in the system as it is, because the system now has responded to that, and now there's capacity and it's going into these private hospitals. Fair. And there's more than just the clinic there. And some might say, in a way, we're lucky to have it. We're lucky to have it if you have the insurance to get into it. Mm. Now, the head of the Irish A&E Consultants accepts that approximately or up to 500 people a year die because they're not triaged within a six-hour period when they're admitted to the hospital. That is an extraordinary figure. We fall over ourselves here for the road safety figures from the RSA to try and get the road deaths down. So in 16, something close to my heart, Pat spoke about it too, and I know you did a section on this in the cycling. Cyclist deaths went from 10 to 15, and, you know, there's hand-wringing around about this and how do we deal with it. Okay, and here in the dark recesses, we have 500 people, up to 500 people, sorry, who die because they're not correctly triaged.
And there are international studies that are backing that up, yeah.
Well, there's worse still to come, but let's just the 500 figure. So, or up to the 500 people per annum. So the triage is, there's a procedure to go through within 6 hours of being admitted to the hospital. And triage is a fancy word for priorities. So which one is the malingerer needs to be sent home and which one has got the serious problem and they need to be acted on immediately. And as anybody who would know, is that a misfortune to have a serious condition, or even maybe you might say not serious, but a serious condition, there are timescales, windows of opportunity you must be caught within. Yeah. And if you go beyond it, well, now they're trying to salvage a situation as opposed to treating it proactively.
You're golden hour after your stroke or heart attack, for example.
The HSE over a decade ago accepted that in or about 4% of people who came to their hospitals for treatment suffered serious injury because of the hospital. 4%. So the figure they pitched at the time was about 80,000 people. Based on international studies, they call it an adverse event. So if you go in and take the wrong leg off, or if you go in and you get overdosed, or if you don't get treated properly, they're all adverse events. If they perforate your bowel in the course of a procedure, that's an adverse event. And this is all, if you like, then may or may not be within the realms of medical negligence. But based on international studies, the figures between 80,000 and 200,000 people are harmed, if you like, in Irish public hospitals every year. So that's an extraordinary figure. Mm-hmm. But let's come back to what we're talking about here, which is the A&E and the triage, this fancy word for priorities. I can't make sense of it, and I'm not a health professional, but just looking at it from the outside, the most junior doctor will deal with you. He's called a senior house officer, SHO, and you'll see that in the card when you're admitted. Or registrar, you've just gone one step up the rung. Or consultant, you're now heading to the top of the ladder. But he's an SHO, or she's an SHO. They're not a consultant yet. Don't have to be a consultant, says you, to be a good doctor. And they're the one who are now got to identify the problems you have and quickly decide whether you require further tests, treatment, whether to be admitted, or what's to happen next. And they're dealing with this in a situation which is basically like something in a war zone. There's people in beds and halls. If you're lucky enough to get a bed, if you're not, just stay in a chair in the waiting department. Like, this is a bad situation compounded by lack of resources. And you say, well, hang on, why don't we trim up the system? And Pat says, get rid of the waiting rooms. I suppose that's all utopian and very idealistic if we can get there. But to think that the most junior will deal with you. So if I'm admitted with a very serious condition on a Friday night and there's no consultant there, or if the consultant on the 40-hour contract has done his 10 hours that week, he's not coming in. If I'm admitted on the Friday night, it could be the Monday before I see the person with the necessary skill and expertise to come along and treat me. Now, there's been a lot of comment in the press, of course, about these consultant contracts, and people are aghast at what these fellas earn. But I've yet to hear someone say, I need a heart transplant, give me the cheapest man to do it. Mm-hmm. That's not the case. You want the one with the skill. And at the moment, they're having difficulty filling the contracts. So, you know, there's a whole wider picture here.
I'm in California for a while. The system is started. Again, I've had experience with my two kids born, one in Belgium and one in the States. So we have access to different systems. California, you went to the hospital when things got really serious. Like a stitch, for instance. Let's say we're cycling and we fall off the bike and we have a bruise. That's an A&E procedure. You never would go to a hospital in California for that. It was always other systems. Private A&Es that were dispersed through. So it returns to the community, because if we keep going through this logic, we will clean out our communities, banks, you know, schools, post offices, you know, and now we have healthcare being withdrawn. We will see the end of rural Ireland if we keep going and centralising everything. So interesting, you'd think in California it'd be highly centralised. It isn't. It's decentralised. Into small units can be very efficient. If they're run by sometimes in a on our private model, they're run quite cost effectively. It's the big systems that will take endless money year after year, and you'll see no incremental improvements or return for money on that investment. Yeah. So I think we're heading possibly too far down the road of these big systems, which we actually need to be dismantled.
I just wonder, and I'll finish it on this, Gabriella. None of us are experts. We'll all pull our hands up and accept that. If there was a simple solution, you know, it would have been found a long time ago. I struggle to figure out why we can't go to another country which does it well and just do what do here. But there's obviously reasons for it.
But I actually think that's what the question is, Gavin. Like, other countries do it well. We are a really small country. Like, if you think Manchester, we are smaller than Manchester in terms of population, and they deliver a health service. And
they've got their own struggles too.
I'm not sure every single system have. But I actually think the mindset and the depression of the nation that's impacted by the system that fails year after year after year is detrimental to our well-being in this country, outside of being sick at all. Yeah. And I actually think because we all protested to keep our local hospitals, we were told, no, centre is vexed. We believe that. And actually people got tired and they got worn out by the fight for their hospital. And I think that has an impact on why we now accept this. I mean, it's absolutely amazing, the figures that you quoted there, Gerard. And to think that we accept it as citizens of a state that doesn't look after our health, we accept it. That we are not out on the street saying, no more. We can't continue. We can't have 2019 with the very same issues that we've had for the last 25 years.
I'll wrap it up there, but I will recommend to our listeners that you read a piece on the journal.ie by Dr. Anthony O'Connor, who's working in the system. He's a consultant gastroenterologist, and writes himself, tries to dispel a few of the myths about overcrowding. Well worth 5 minutes of your time on the journal.ie. We'll be back more in 2 minutes. Friday panel with me in studio. We've continued our conversation off air, but we'll move on now. Gabriella Hanrahan, Gareth Howard and Patrick O'Neill. We discussed this week, Gerode, following on from a conversation with Councillor Mike McKee, antisocial behaviour and intimidation. It focused in particular on Shannon. He was highlighting an area in that town, a town where you know particularly well, of course. There is an investigation ongoing into that, and I know I'm not worried at all about what you might say, but we will just point that out and allow the guards to do their work. But how big of an issue or otherwise is antisocial behaviour generally in your experience?
Well, on a human level, we all say that my young fella wouldn't do that. I know my young fella.
Yeah.
Well, like, we all remember the case, and I'm sure most of the listeners remember the case, of the Annabelle nightclub assault 18 years ago.
Yes.
When three or four lads throttled another fella outside the nightclub and he died. It was a 30-second assault, and he was knocked unconscious and died within an hour of the assault. Mm. And the four lads, all from Blackrock and living in a nice leafy suburb above in Dublin, got jail time. And guys who we'd hear were from great solid backgrounds and good educations, the pack mentality took over. And did they pay a price for it? And did poor man, Brian Murphy was his name, actually pay a price for it? And his family, 18 years of age, and he was killed over nothing. No one could ever actually say afterwards, as far as I can recall, and I could be wrong in this, but the ferocity in the 30 seconds, the poor man was assaulted and he died on a street in Dublin. It's awful. And there were four families of the boys who were convicted who would gladly have sworn, stood by them and said, my young fella'd never do that.
Mm.
So, you know, the pack mentality can't take over. I don't think that, you know, Shannon is a town that deserves to be blackened because of this. I know it's the focal point or because of comments that have been made. But this is in most towns and cities in Ireland. And, you know, it does come home. It's really about, where is your child? Do you know where they are, or do you think you know where you are? Are you loosely familiar with it? That's what it's about, and who are they with? Mm. And, you know, because it's all well and good to criticise and say, well, there isn't enough policing there, but the guards can't be everywhere, and they have a very difficult job to do. And that's the truth. The prison system is bursting at the seams. There's people get into prison, it's been well publicised, and they sit in the chair for a couple of hours and they're out again.
Put in for a U-turn, yeah.
Yeah, but you know, because the soft crime, it's something that won't happen again. Maybe they didn't tax the car three times or no insurance four times and they're out again. They didn't hurt anybody or kill anybody and they're out again. It's a soft crime, you know, so there's a bit of a carousel going on in the system. But like, people must accept that these sort of assaults or an element of this crime is not by, you know, the marginalised sections of society. Mm. A good portion of that is by what you might regard as good people. What's a good person, you know, if they go and assault somebody on a Saturday night inside the Queen's? You can't be doing this, you know. So it's really about, I suppose, you know, what people know about their own kids and where they are. Like, we've all seen the young teenagers marauding around the place. Some of them are harmless, some of them are not. You know, and there was
a fine line to go from one to the other.
It is, but it for me, and I remember this as a child, maybe you guys remember that there was, used to be an ad on television about where's your dog at night, and it showed a picture of the household pet around the legs in the house, next thing he goes out attacking sheep. You know, and that's ridiculous. You know, my son wouldn't do that. That's what happens. So go and talk to the people in the Annabelle nightclub, because they didn't think they were going out to kill anybody that night, but they did it. Mm. And I'm not talking about, so that's an extreme example, but you have to use, I find sometimes, an extreme example to get the point across. You know, so in time, we're going to have court cases perhaps out of this. We're going to have parents and leaders, community coming into court and swearing that this young fella is an honest to goodness young fella. Yeah, he might have been, but he had the lapse there, didn't he?
Okay. Answer me this. Is the legal system in general too soft on this type of crime? Because that was something that was a common theme that people were saying from your experience.
Well, the old cliche says hard cases make bad law. And what can you do? Because no one size fits all. If you spent a day over in the district court listening to the stories of life over there and how difficult and tragic they are, the newspapers will print and maybe, to a degree, maybe put a bit of spin and sensationalise stories in the court. But, you know, there is a very difficult human tragedy in the court on both sides, not just for the victims.
Yeah.
You know, but also people coming from very difficult circumstances, grew up in a bad neighbourhood, maybe didn't go to school, were not picked up on by the local health workers.
Yeah, but many people would feel, and I wouldn't say that they're wrong in that, that, you know, I don't care what your background is, if you commit a violent crime against a person, you deserve to be punished.
Absolutely. And then, you know, this then really gets the heckles going when you see, so those guys that I mentioned, they're from Annabelle nightclub. I think one of them got 9 months or 12 months and he was involved in this violent assault. And people would say, well, hang on, he murdered someone, give him 10 or 12 years. Mm. But we only have so many places in the system. And is that fair that if a lifelong criminal murders somebody and they get 12 years, and then somebody in this situation where it's not entirely clear whether he did strike the blow that killed or what his contribution to it was, should he also get 12 years? In the States, in some of the states in the US of A, yeah, three strikes and you're gone.
Yeah.
So, you know, there has to be fairness in the system, and it's important, you know, there's definitely a large variation between the different judges you'll appear in front and who will deal with you. There was an excellent judge for many years, Judge Carney, who was, you know, continually criticised in the press, but he was a very, very good judge. And so there's no one size fits all. You can't legislate and say that must be the sentence. You must give a degree of independence to the judge to make that call. And I'm sorry, I can't agree with that when I hear it because of my own experience in the system.
No, and that's why I wanted to give you a chance to say that, Gabriella. What do you think?
Well, it's an age-old problem, isn't it, really, you know? I'm very lucky in where I live. I don't have to deal with unsociable behaviour by young people. But I do know in my work as a community liaison officer that people have to live with that on a daily basis. I also deal with young people in my work, and I just find them extraordinarily good people.
Mm.
But I do know that it exists. I do think our response has been is so traditional to it, like you either go to court and get and go into the revolving door system. I think we need to look at ways of maybe doing restorative justice, that you get people to come out and that they work in the neighbourhood that they have been that they've caused problems with, and that they get to know their neighbours in a different, in a social way, as opposed to having these laws imposed on them. Because it's about education, it's about learning, it's about changing the mindset, and that's for one particular group where we have that issue. The one you're talking about, where a lot of it is alcohol fueled, and it is shocking. I like a drink myself, I will not deny that, but I do think that the alcohol intake now, the mix, the shorts, the Jager bombs, that mix cannot be good mentally for you.
The tablet on top of it.
The tablet on top. That's an explosion in the mind, I can imagine, around being able to control your responses.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is that instant response. If somebody hits off you, if somebody bangs off you, and then you lose the head, and then you can get into a row about something, and it's... like
and then stuff happens.
That's what happens, you know?
And 99 times out of 100, it blows over, and then...
And the damage is there, the damage doesn't blow over.
Yeah,
so
the idea of flashpoints, in that instant, it means the idea that that moment in time where someone's life is going to change.
Absolutely.
Or multiples in that example. Yeah. And that flashpoint is when the person has, I'm not taking any accountability away, but probably doesn't know the consequences of what they're about to do.
Mm.
Otherwise, they're going out to intend to murder. Mm. And that's always a question in legal argument, there's no intent there. But that moment, I do believe what Gabrielle is saying, the alcohol content at that point in time, I think if you measured the alcohol levels of the people who commit those crimes at that moment, that flashpoint, I'd imagine that alcohol content was way above. Mm.
But that's not a defence either.
No,
it isn't a defence. You're not saying it is.
I know
you're not saying it is, but it is a point that has to be made.
Yeah, but look, I think in the system, there is this socially, national whatever, problem of equity across the system of punitive, right? We can take someone who shoplifts inside in town here today, and the full weight of our legal system will come onto that person. The guards will be called to a Penny's or Dunn's or whatever, and they'll be taken away in the police car, and they will be brought into the police legal, the whole system there. Our institutional crimes are largely going untouched, and we know what those are, with banks and other things. So if the banking system dips into my pocket and takes money out through the tracker mortgage system, when will a police car ever show up to a bank? So there's something broadly wrong here, that our young people may be seeing a culture that is highly inequitable in some respects, and there is a level of disrespect
But and that kind of goes back to what you said, Gord, finally, in that you talked about how what serves the system right, what serves people right in terms of what sort of a sentence they should get as well. I guess what Patrick has just said is the flip side of that, in that people feel that if you're from the margins, you get the full weight of the law against you. If you're from the upper classes, you're dealt with in a much lighter way.
Well, I have to say from my time in the district court that some of the best practitioners I've seen at work are the actual criminal lawyers. They're very, very good. And these are guys who run the criminal aid system, which does get criticised. But you are entitled to a fair hearing. You are entitled to representation. And, the local criminal lawyers that I would know, we'll read about them every week in the paper, they're very, very good. And they're dogged, and they will give you 100%. And the criminal system will only work if your representative gives it 100%. I can't decide if you come in to me and say I didn't do it and I know Gavin did it. Yeah, look at him. He's definitely guilty. I can't sit back and leave you fully exposed with no defence. The system doesn't work, then it breaks down. That's when you get people getting convicted unfairly. It's not my decision. It's not my choice. Now, there's people sitting at home saying, listen to your man now. He wasn't the one broken into or beaten up or had his car robbed. We all have a role to play in the system, and that is the defence lawyer's role. So the ones in the margins, ironically, actually are, as far as I can see, are very well represented.
Back in a couple of minutes.
If it matters to you, let us know. Contact us now, 1850 400 964, or email focus@clare.fm.
You're welcome back for the final here, Gabriella Hanrahan, Gareth Howard and Patrick O'Neill. It's the perennial question. Who's made any New Year's resolutions?
No one. I'm using the younger people's term, this bucket list. I have it pretty much filled in now.
Okay. filled I did in one as a month. In you've done it or filled in as in you, this is what I want to do?
I won a month is, and I did it for a big birthday there a year or two ago and it worked because I got through the 12 items by August. I was looking for something to do. So I started over Christmas and they're always what I call the low-hanging fruit things. They are high value to me, but they don't cost me a ton of money. If it's high cost, high value, that means the big holiday. No, that'll happen if it happens. So every month, not expensive, but something I've always wanted to do.
A treat for yourself.
Yeah, but it's an activity-based. Always activity-based. Okay. It's never a purchase.
I like that idea. Yeah, it's nice.
Never a purchase. And if it gives me high value, and it only means I have to spend time, you know, schedule it and go and do it. In the big bucket, I wanted to learn how to dance, Shannos dancing. So I got my first lesson.
There you go.
Nackle Island. a wonderful teacher. I give her a plug, Edwina Gucci, and she runs a dance school on the island. But, you know, so that wasn't like, I happened to be in Westford anyway, where I used to live, you know, and that was one of the highlights of the year. Climbing Kilpatrick on the day of my birthday. Cost me nothing.
But you got
those are the ones, and you can get through once a month, and it's like it is a treat. But I'm not financially committed.
I understand
to it,
what you mean. It's a reward of time. Mm-hmm. It's a nice one. So, have you got anything?
I'm a bit like the hospital crisis. I repeat the same ones every year, and I never fulfil them. That's why I have to start again.
So you just
thing.
Photocopy the sheet.
Yeah, in my brain, I go this year definitely, and it's always going to be. I am going to walk in here. In a size 10 dress. It's always going to be that. And I never succeed. And I never really start until after the 6th of January. Because I think Little Christmas is very important. And women's Christmas. And my mother's birthday is tomorrow. So we always get together.
Enjoy.
Happy birthday to her. So we always get together. And after that, then I start to do a bit of work for a couple of weeks anyway. And then fail then... Probably the end of February.
There's your 12 items there. Fill them in.
Patrick has literally got his bucket list. It's a physical list. He's got it out of his bag. Do you bother?
I suppose eat a bit healthier, drink a little less. As I heard someone say one time, who was an avid smoker and was spent their life trying to give up smoking. I said, giving up smoking is actually quite easy. I did it 3 times today already.
Yeah, I like your one. I'm going to start mine about, it'll be Monday week when I start mine. I'd only fail by then if
yeah, because the fridge is still full. There's still
exactly,
stuff
there's
to be.
There, Gavin, writing it down. The chances are that you'll do it. That's what triggered mine 2 years ago. It's the fact that I created that list. I held myself accountable for it. I didn't hit all of them. I may have massaged a few. But geez, at the end of the year, there's tremendous sense.
Sorry, Pat, I write it down every year. It still doesn't work.
Geez, if I write it
just hang on to the list for next year.
Can I suggest a few things you might do?
You can do it off here. We'll check in 12 months' time how you've done, because I need to leave it there. Patrick and Gabriella and Grove, really appreciate your time this morning. Thanks, and many happy returns to you all. We will be back with more in a moment.
Morning Focus, in association with Shannon Airport. Fly Shannon and pack more into your day with up to 38 departures each week to London. Explore more today on shannonairport.ie.